John, I have no need to see an 80-year-old go to jail for this type of crime, especially with some of the violent crime that goes unpunished. A hefty fine, yes. Jail, no. And the woman who was seen to be the returning gold medalist, is the returning gold medalist in the 800 meters from the United States, competing in the U.S. national trials, got tripped from behind. No fault of hers. She falls. She doesn't qualify for the 800 meters, the half mile. I think that's a problem that is fixable. I know that if you line everybody up and say race, it is what it is. You know, whoever wins, wins. But that doesn't determine who's best. It determines who crossed the tape first that day. And if somebody got tripped from behind, they didn't cross the tape at all or fell way back. And now that's just not a good system to picking the best athletes. John, only three per event go to Paris. Would you tell the woman who finished in the race in third that she can't go so that the other runner can? Yes, I would. And she'd say, but that's not fair. And I'd say, yeah, but she's faster than you. See, we want to send the fastest runners, and you aren't the fastest, so you don't get to go. Or you can be an alternate. Maybe if, and I don't know why they don't do this. I know you can't do it on the marathon or maybe a really long race, but if it's an event where you judge that the person didn't qualify through no fault of their own, then at least give them a chance to run the event unimpeded. Line the guy up and say, okay, 100-yard dash, you're on your own. It's not going to be easy. You don't have the field to run against, but let's see what you got. You could give that lady a day to rest and then say, okay, I think, Moo, you've got one more shot at it. No one is going to trip you. Let's see what you got. And if you beat somebody, then they get bumped and you go. I don't know what's so hard about that. That's not the way we do it. Eric Zorn is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter you can get to for free. You can also pay a small fee for a premium subscription. You can start by just emailing ericzorn@gmail.com. He's a member of our Mincing Rascals podcast and was 3 years ago this week a member of the Chicago Tribune. Not editorial staff. You were a columnist for the Tribune for a long time. Hi, Eric Zorn.
Hi, John. I have an opinion about everything, and my opinion about this 100-yard dash thing is that what they should probably do is have, say, your best times over your last 10 races and take that because, you're right, it isn't fair to pick somebody who happens to have a good day or bad day or gets tripped or whatever, that you want to send your fastest people. And the way to do that would be to average their times over, X number of previous races over a certain time period. And that seems like if you want the best, that's what you do. You wouldn't judge somebody on one race. And that's that seems like a good way to do it. I'm not sure why they don't, because there's so much riding on these on one event, one run. And anyway, so that would be my view on that.
In football, you just play one game. It's single elimination. In the NCAA men's basketball tournament, it's single elimination. But in baseball and in hockey and in basketball, they are seven-game series. I'm not sure exactly how you decide which should be which. Obviously, football is more punishing, so you can't expect the guys to play seven games. But hockey isn't a walk in the park, and they do play seven. But I would be very conservative about that too, Eric. Like, if you had the cold or the flu, let's just say you just had a bad race and you lost, that should probably stick. But if you get tripped or there's some foul or violation or traffic was so bad you couldn't get to the track on time, that's happened before too. Let's see what you got. Give the person a chance to run.
Yeah, and there are also the issue of false starts. That you can get disqualified. I'm not sure what the standard is. One or two false starts and you're out?
No, it's one. It's one for the field. It's one for the field. Yeah, so if say there's 10 of us line up and you false start, everybody goes back, and then the next false start is an automatic disqualification, even if I wasn't the one that did the first false start. Otherwise, you get 10 guys that all take a shot at jumping the gun, and then you get 10 stop start. So the second fault is a field fault. Whoever is the second time, you're out.
So the one who does it the second time is out.
Yep. Even if they didn't do it the first.
See, I don't like that. I like my idea better of saying, let's instead of running one 100-meter race or one 440 or whatever, take their average times, because I mean your country wants to send the best runners to the Olympics. I take your point about wanting to exhaust things or make them go on forever, but one of the great dramas of the NCAA basketball tournament is that it's one and done. So you have these upsets where a tiny school will beat a big school, and they would never beat them in a 7-game or a 5-game series.
Right.
On any given day, it can win. So that's what adds drama to that. But if you want fairness, I mean, especially with baseball, or the pitching makes so much difference, to have a one game. That the thing they do now with the one game play-in or the one game playoff, it's kind of crazy, because baseball is not a one game.
No, it's 162. By the way, 630 said, if you're going to just send the best presumed athletes, why even have the trials? Fair point. John, I don't necessarily like the rules, but the top three deserve to go. They performed the best when it was time to do so. Hey, Eric, I've spoken too much today, Eric, about the Ed Burke verdict or sentencing, but what's your thought about that?
I had a couple of thoughts. One is that the fine, $2 million, seems like a lot, but he can pull that right out of his campaign money. It's not going to nick him at all. He's got a reported net worth of $30 million. I think if you really wanted to put a sting on him, you would have maybe given him a $20 million fine, because that would really hurt. The fine he's got now is going to be nothing. The 2-year sentence I thought was okay. It compares to what a lot of aldermen get. Given his prominence, it probably should have been a little longer. He's 80 years old, as I'm sure you've talked about a lot, and so 2 years is a pretty significant percentage of the time he likely has left on this earth. So it's a big deal for someone that age to go to prison. I also am wondering why it is that he gets 3 months to get his affairs in order before he has to report to prison. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Had a chance to do whatever you would do for the next 3 months, the previous 3 months. This goes, really, the crime goes back to 2016, and the trial has been years in the making. So I'll bet he's already, written down his credit card numbers and taking care of any paperwork he's had to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously not a danger to society, but still, it's like it seems to diminish the offense by saying, well, you go have yourself a nice summer, Alderman, and come back to us after Labor Day, and we'll send you off to prison. Especially given that he was convicted, if you remember, in December, and he was charged 5 years ago. So you're right. He had plenty of time to get his affairs in order, as they say. And this idea of like letting him walk around free for 3 more months, I don't get it. I mean, I would like a lawyer to explain to me what the purpose of that is. I get maybe a little bit of a delay so the Bureau of Prisons can figure out the right place to go. But we don't do that with violent criminals. So it can clearly be done. So that's a thought that's been bothering me today.
It's just more mercy for him. I think this was as good as he could have hoped for. This was merciful. And the reporting is that he seemed very happy. Hugs and back slaps in the courtroom when the sentence was announced.
Well, let's face it. His reputation is shot. He's been disgraced and humiliated. And, he's a big Chicago history man. He's notably a history buff. And he'll tell you all kinds of stories about, the history of this town and all the famous people who have gone before him. And now he's going to be in the rogues gallery of Chicago history. He's going to be a dark chapter in Chicago history, and that's got to hurt him a lot as well. I mean, he was a very proud man, and this has brought him really low. So, 2 years, at 80 years old, it's a pretty big sentence for someone at that age, I think.
Yeah. Well, your perspective on that, how much time do you have left? And even in his letter to the judge, he asked, to spend whatever time he has remaining with his wife, kids, and grandkids. So he's kind of doing the calculation as well. But if you think about it in terms of how many years do you have left on Earth, 2 becomes a bigger number. And that's, I guess, worth consideration.
Yeah. So, the other thing is, of course, that as the judge said yesterday, this has not proven to be a deterrent, that you can send all the politicians you want to Stripe City and they keep doing it. And famously, Rod Blagojevich was engaged in his corrupt acts while George Ryan, his predecessor, was sitting in prison. So there doesn't seem to be any lessons learned.
But Blagojevich, Don't you think this is also something for all of us to consider? It's true about Blagojevich. It's true about Ed Burke. It's possible that they really thought that this is how the game is played, and not in a corrupt way. It's politics. It's, you know, I'll compromise on this if you do that. I'll help you out here, but you need to help me out here. I mean, we would like Republicans and Democrats to be that way in the Congress, sort of cooperate. And I know this sounds like a stretch, Eric, but I think that Burke would say that he did nothing wrong. His plea was not guilty. And Blagojevich actually thought that what he did was not criminal. You know what I mean?
Yes, and he was wrong about that. I do want to add though that anyone who is portraying what he said to the judge yesterday as an expression of guilt or an admission is wrong. I mean, he basically said, "Oh, I'm really sorry about all that's gone on. I'm sorry to my family. This is all on me."
Yeah.
He didn't admit to doing anything wrong. He's left the door open for an appeal, which I understand, and it's not fair to ask someone who thinks they have a good grounds for an appeal to get up and say they were guilty, because that would complicate things. But let's be clear, he has not expressed remorse for his specific acts. And it's kind of like he's sorry he got caught or something. I'm not exactly sure what, if you parse that short little statement that he read, there's an apology, but there's not an admission or a confession in there. So
really, so when he said things like, "I take sole responsibility for this, this is my doing," that's not sufficiently contrite for you, Eric?
No, it's not. I think he's not saying that he did these things. He's not saying that he committed crimes. He's saying that, in effect, you can spin that and say, well, what he's saying is that what I did that you construed as a crime,
yes,
was my doing.
Yes.
But of course, it wasn't a crime, and
yeah,
I'm innocent, but I know that you feel this way, and therefore I know that you're going to punish me, but I'm not going to say that I did anything wrong.
Okay, I'll tell you what he said, and then you tell me what you would have preferred he say. He said, "The blame for this is mine and mine alone. I regret the pain and sorrow that I caused my family and dear friends, and I would ask Your Honor to have compassion and mercy." What's a better version of that, Eric?
A better version of that?
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been, I certainly would have been an apology to the citizens of Chicago and the people that he harmed, the people that he tried to extort. And I don't think he wanted to say that. And I think that when you read that carefully, you say that he's taking responsibility for acts that he says were not crime.
Yeah.
That the government,
yeah,
has construed these as crimes, and I did say these things clearly. I mean, he's caught on tape. There's no dispute about some of the things that he was caught on tape saying. So he takes responsibility for that. He said those things, but he doesn't believe that they
are
crimes.
Let me ask you this: who was harmed? Who was harmed by this?
Well, anybody who he tried to extort money from, anyone.
Give me an example. Give me one example. I mean, listen, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, but I've said today, I'm hard pressed to think of somebody who really suffered for his extortion or crimes. Tell me who suffered.
It's the same. It's with the Burger King.
Where
the guy says, you know, you've got to do that. I mean, it is the act of trying to extort someone that causes harm. It causes,
but you understand
harm
what I'm saying. So that guy's,
yes,
kneecaps,
right,
are intact, and his bank account is intact. So I'm not. So when you say "show me the victim," I think you could say that it's hard to find how people suffered per se for what Ed Burke did.
Personally, yeah, you're right. I mean, there are certainly people who, like at the museum, who felt like they were being intimidated by,
yeah,
him into taking an act that they would not do. Right, and so that, just that act alone, that abuse of office alone, is an offense on the entire civic fabric. In a way.
Yeah, I know that. But that's a little squishy.
Well, it was the same thing with Blagojevich. I mean, all of his schemes came a cropper, right? He never was able to get anything for his. He ended up appointing Roland Burris to the Senate because he couldn't manage to extort anybody else to give him anything for it. And he ended up not being able to extort the Children's Hospital and the racetrack and so on. So these were all attempts. And of course, we always have to ask whether how much of this has been going on that we don't have on tape, that we don't know about.
Well,
going back,
that's an interesting point. Okay, John Williams here. We're talking to Eric Zorn, a member of the Mincing Rascals podcast panel. We were talking about the Olympics as well as the Ed Burke story. Producer Pete just handed me this as a reminder of how some of the U.S. Olympic trials are going. Quincy Wilson, a 16-year-old from Bulls School outside Washington, D.C., finished sixth in the men's 400-meter finals with a time of 44.94. He is 16 years old, just finished his sophomore year in high school. He ran it in under 45 seconds, which is crazy. The winning time was 44.17. This kid ran it in 44.94 to finish in sixth place. That's how tight that was. Over the course of 0.7 seconds, you have six runners crossing the line. He was in sixth place. Still, he said, this is the best day ever for me. 42 years, no one's run that fast at that age, and he did. So he has he's sort of looking on the bright side there, and he'll get his turn in 4 years when he's still only 20 years old, and he might run on the men's Olympic relay team. That's, are you the fan of the Olympics that I am, Eric?
I really like the track and field events, and yeah, sort of. I mean, what I end up doing is I end up recording tons of it on the DVR and jumping through to the final events. It drives my wife crazy. I'll put on a swimming event. If it's a long race, I'll forward through the first half or so, at least, maybe to the last lap and watch them finish. So, yeah, it's really interesting to me. The human drama is really interesting. These are sports that we, for the most part, don't pay any attention to for 4 years. And then suddenly we're all, I mean, I couldn't have told you, you know, for the life of me, who the fastest people are in the U.S. But now I will start to follow it, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting summer.
John, my daughter is a sophomore, was her school's best high jumper. Instead of sending her to the state finals, they sent the senior high jumper and told my daughter she'd get a turn next year. The school did not win the high jump. Well, but you do have...
That's wrong.
I guess if they had the ability to do that, if you compete at the regionals, sectionals, super sectionals, whatever, you win or you lose. You win or you lose. I'm a little confused by this, but I'm sure that person's telling me the truth. You feel, Eric, that if Joe Biden does poorly enough at the debate Thursday night, that the Democrats should find another candidate. Is that right?
I do think so. I think he's going to do fine, but I think if he falters and it looks like some of these concerns that people have about his age and acuity are real, that it isn't too late for him to drop out. He has to drop out because he's got the delegates. He will actually be the nominee fairly shortly. They're going to do this virtual roll call in order to, there's a deadline in Ohio that you have to be a party's nominee by, I think, August 7th, and our convention doesn't happen until mid-August, so they're going to have to do a virtual roll call. He will be the party's nominee very shortly. There is not much time left for the party to decide otherwise. But if he does poorly and concerns really grow, then I can see them trying to go to him and say, look, Joe, thank you for your last 4 years of service, but it's time to step aside for a new generation of politicians and a new candidate. Because I keep hearing a lot of concern from Democrats. Now, I mean, Republicans, of course, are throwing everything at him, but I've heard a lot of Democrats saying, I think that he's going to be a weak candidate in the fall. And they're worried about that. And I wish they had done this a year and a half ago. And they said, you know, Joe, you're an 80-year-old man. It's time for you to step aside, time for some new leadership. And they didn't do that. And they let him decide he was going to run again. And he did. And here we are. But I'm a little concerned about it. I think Trump is the one who really has to worry about what's going to happen to this debate, because he's been pretty unhinged lately.
Oh, I think it's Joe Biden's too. Joe Biden has more to lose than Donald Trump has to gain. I think Trump could. I'll tell you what. Let's you and I finish this conversation on the Mincing Rascals podcast. We will record that tomorrow. It'll drop just before the debate. So we'll preview it that way. How does that sound, Eric?
That sounds really good. I think it's going to be one of the most interesting presidential debates maybe since Kennedy Nixon. It's one of the most consequential, especially taking place when it does so early in the cycle.
In a similar sort of setting, too. Okay, good to talk to Eric Zorn, Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com. Hey, John Williams, I competed in 3 Olympic trials years ago. In track, the athlete selects him or herself for the team. There's no committee, there's no favorites, there's no subjective judgment. You're responsible for being ready on the day of your event. If you fall down, you cannot assume you would have beaten the person who finished third. Stuff happens. This is as it should be.